a tie cat. Clay faked the game. Mazzoli throws the goal line. Wide open touchdown, John Childs. A 19-yard score, and the Tie Cats are right back in the football game. On second now, the rush is coming again. The ball is out. The Tie Cats have the football, and Hamilton wins the game. John Chick knocks it free. Snap is down, the kick is up, and it's good. And the Hamilton Tie Cats roar back in Ottawa, avenge a loss last week, and now draw within 1 point for first place in the East Division.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Oh, Mike. So, as I said a few weeks ago, I went to Ottawa for the game against the Red Blacks. I have some stories I'd like to share. I think these stories will make you laugh. One is about my trip to Ottawa, and one is about what I consider to be one of the greatest exchanges in my history on Twitter. But let's start with Ottawa. So I went to the game and I cheered on our Tie Cats. We'll get into how that game ended up gloriously for the both of us a little bit later. But because I was cheering for our team, I was pretty aggressively chirped by a couple of Red Blacks fans that were sitting in my section. It was nothing too bad, but two dudes in particular did not take too kindly to me cheering for the Tabbies. One told me, and this is a direct quote, that I was in the wrong city. I replied to him, I travel to games, it's fun, you should try it sometime. It kind of shut him up. I didn't hear from him the rest of the game. There was another fan, though, that got super pissed off at me when I cheered for anything related to the Tie Cats. Like, he was full-blown cursing at me because I dared to cheer for the team that I cheer for at an away game. It was kind of funny in how ridiculous it was, but like at one point he just could not handle it. I think that the Red Blacks got like a tackle to force a punt, and he like turned around and was like, yeah, and like screaming in my face. And I was just like, okay, buddy, like just calm down. The best part though, I you know, I'm not going to get into it with fans. I'm not there to get into fights or screaming matches or anything like that. I'm there to enjoy the game. Neither were very chatty when the game was over for reasons that we will get into in a minute. But this was kind of the first time I'd ever really been aggressively chirped like this at a football game. And I've gone to plenty of games at opposing stadiums. I think I handled it well, but at the end of the day, I think it was just really funny.
Yeah, I can't say I've ever been chirped like that at a football game either. I mean, I've been to, you know, at least a handful of Toronto Hamilton games in Toronto, and been to Ottawa once. That was in the Renegades day, and Montreal once. But yeah, I've never gotten into it heavily with the, not that you got into it with him, but you know, I've never been yelled at or anything like that at a football game.
No, this was the very first time I think this has ever happened. Like you, I've been to Toronto games, been to Montreal games. I've interacted with fans of other teams. I interacted with Red Blacks fans at the game that I know, and after the game, we were all just kind of enjoying, hey, it was a great football game. It was, there was no animosity or anything. It's just, we're all part of the same league and we're getting along, but yeah, these guys didn't take too kindly. However, there is a second story here that I have been laughing at since it happened. So on Monday, which was October 24th, I had a guy tweet at me calling me a douche for a tweet that I sent out on October 15th. Where I said the Tie Cats were terrible. He said I was disloyal to the team. Now, if you recall, this would have been the day after they had lost their third straight game, and anyone who would have said the Tie Cats didn't stink at that point were lying to themselves. So I get this message, and I'm called a douche, and I was like, I don't think I've ever been called a douche before. So I kind of laugh it off and give it back to him a little bit. I don't call him names or anything. I just kind of joke. He responds back to that by calling me a disloyal pig with no life. I kid you not that this actually happened. I changed my Twitter handle to Disloyal Pig. I have not been able to stop laughing about that insult since I read it. I don't think I've ever been called something like that before. And in all honesty, it was just like really, really, really funny that he was so angry that I would have the gall to rip into the team that I cheer for. And the tweet itself was that I sent out was really not that bad. I was more making fun of the Argos It was when I was watching the Argos game. They were getting blown out. I think it was by Saskatchewan. And I kind of just said, like, whenever I think the Ticats are terrible, and they are, I'm still happy that they're not the Argos. They're a complete clown show. So I was more using it to make fun of Toronto, and this guy just was not having it. So from here on out, I'm going to be going by the moniker of Disloyal Pig. I think it's funny, too, because you and I always talk about no one ever really calls us out for being jerks. I've had that happen. So after this incident in Ottawa and the insult spewing on Twitter, I'm starting to think I'm not very well liked.
Oh, no, Josh, you are. But that Disloyal Pig comment, I mean, that was a zinger right there.
It's so good. Oh, yeah. My God. I was enthralled. When I saw it, I was just so happy. I was like, you know what? You're going to insult me. Throwing that out there, that's pretty darn clever. I clapped for it. I just, like I said, I changed my Twitter name to it because I thought it was so good.
Now, you never interacted with this fellow before? Or
No. And the thing is, like I said, so it was Monday, and he was upset about a tweet I sent out like 10 days before. I don't know how he came across it. I don't know why all of a sudden he was like, you're a piece of human garbage, you disloyal pig. I don't know where this came from, but yeah, it was so random. I had a Twitter notification, I checked my mentions, and there it was, and I have been laughing about it since Monday. It is just too good.
Does he follow you?
No. Doesn't, actually, in fact, he blocked me after I had said, I actually praised him for the tweet. I said, like, this is genius, this is awesome, I disloyal pig, I love it. Maybe he thought I was making fun of him. Maybe he didn't, like, take too kindly to the fact that it didn't, like, rip at my non-existent soul. I don't know. But he was very unhappy with my response and proceeded to block me. So I don't know. Never heard from this guy before. Won't ever hear from him again. But he gifted us. He gifted us, Michael, with Disloyal Pig. And for that, I will forever be grateful.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
So let's get into the football game that actually occurred last week. Our beloved Hamilton Tiger Cats were triumphant when they went into Ottawa and beat the Ottawa Red Blacks in double overtime by a score of 39-36. I was in the stands for that game. It was wet. It was a somewhat sloppy affair. Lots of turnovers by both teams, something you kind of expected from a game that was played in those conditions. The high score really surprised me, which was nice. But in a must-win game for our boys in black and gold, at least as far as keeping their first place hopes alive, they did just enough to leave Ottawa with a W. So it's been a while since you and I had a chance to sit down and celebrate a win together, but here we are. It feels good. And not only are we celebrating a win, we're celebrating a playoff berth, Mike. As with that win last Friday, the Hamilton Tiger Cats are officially playoff bound for the fourth straight year. They're in the dance, Mike. Anything can happen when you get in the dance. So how happy were you when Brett Maher's field goal in double overtime sailed through those uprights?
I was pretty damn happy. I gotta admit, I was stressing that whole game. I did not think they would be able to pull it out, but they found a way, and I couldn't be happier about it. I mean, yes, we're 7-9, and that's not the record I was hoping for at this point of the season, but, you know, we're in the playoffs. We got a shot, so just, you know, cheer on every game from now on in, because I'm hoping they go on a three-game winning streak, get to 9-9, and then, you know, we've seen it so many times. The teams that are the hottest going into the playoffs usually have the best chance of, you know, grabbing a Grey Cup championship. So I'm hoping that the Ticats are that team this year.
Yeah, all those losses earlier in the year, the three-game losing streak we just endured, it will all have been worth it if this team finds a way to cohese and gel over the final month now of the season, including the playoffs, and goes on a little winning streak here of three in the regular season and hopefully two or three more, if depending on where they finish in the standings in the postseason. And we're sitting here in a little over a month's time talking about an improbable Grey Cup championship. But I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. What did you think? I was in this, like I said, numerous times. I was in the stands for this game, and it was an incredible football game. Double overtime, 39-36. Was this one of the most exciting games of the year for you?
Yeah, I'd have to, you know, one of them for sure. I was thoroughly entertained by this game, and I was surprised that it was such an exciting game considering that it was raining so heavily you know, usually it's more sloppy running the ball in that kind of weather, but both quarterbacks were tossing it up. And yeah, it was, you know, if you want to show someone CFL football for the first time, that might be one of the games you'd show them.
Yeah, and another incredible comeback for the Ticats. They're sort of making their mark this season on getting down early and making these comebacks, the opposite of last year where they would get up early and nurse a lead. So let's get into the minutiae of this. Mike, what tickled your nads offensively in this game?
Well, I thought that, you know, I'm just going to stay off the start here. I'm trying to get the stats at CFL.ca, but I can't because they keep sending me to Ticketmaster to buy Grey Cup tickets. So that's kind of interesting.
they really want you to buy those Grey Cup tickets.
I know, right? Maybe they'll pay for my flight and hotel room, but that's probably not going to happen. But I was impressed with Mazzoli. I thought that, you know, he threw his couple picks like he usually does, but then he threw, I believe, 3 touchdown passes. So this guy has a lot of talent, and he just, like we've talked about so many times, he just has to cut down the mental mistakes, and he'd be a pretty damn good quarterback, I think. I thought they ran the ball effectively. I thought that the younger receivers, the newer guys in the lineup, the Junior Collins, the John Childs, really stood out and showed what they have in this game, because we need them down the stretch without Owens and Tasker. We need these guys to step up, and I thought they did that this game.
I couldn't agree with you more. Mazzoli, 27 of 41, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 359 yards passing. The 2 picks were terrible because of where they occurred, and if the team would have lost this football game, you would have looked back and gone, you can't make those mistakes. And they were both in the red zone, essentially, deep in Ottawa territory. One was like on the 5-yard line. You can't make those mistakes, but they get the win, so that's sort of glossed over. You mentioned the run game, dude. Once again, they I don't know if this is a newfound thing that they're doing here, or if maybe they're listening to the show. That's arrogant on my part. Of course, they know what they're doing. They're not listening to our show and taking our advice. But CJ Gable had 14 carries for 61 yards. This is the second straight game he's gone over 60 yards rushing. The second straight game he's gone over double digit touches. He had a receiving touchdown this one. They're finally using him in the running game and in the passing game. And we both know, we're both big fans of CJ Gable. We know what he can do. It's nice to see him get going. And those young receivers you mentioned, John Childs, 4 catches for 31 yards, and he had the big game-tying touchdown. Junior Collins only had 1 catch, but it was a bomb for 45 yards. So you're right. The younger guys really stepped up. And
obviously, Kevin Elliott had a huge game. I mean, what a first game for him. It was very impressive to watch him play.
5 catches, 102, and a touchdown. Spun the ball a bunch. I remember when he was with Toronto and he would do that, it would piss me off. But when he started doing it in the right colors, I'm all for it. Spin that ball. I want to see him spin that ball a dozen times a game, because that means he's making a dozen catches. Andy Fantuz was great as well. And I think this is something we have to talk about. I know it's probably something you want to talk about. The offensive line. They started 4 Canadians. They had a rookie at right tackle. And I think they had a hell of a football game.
I think they did too. I thought they protected Mazzoli great. They, you know, we've been harping on them. I think they had the most sacks given up in the league. I believe they had the most sacks last year given up. So this has been a weak point of the team for a couple years. And I'm glad to see them coming together this late in the season. And it's so important for the offense to have a good offensive line, you know, protect who's ever in quarterback out there. And if Mazzoli can have success with these guys in front of him, then Caleros can have a ton of success with these guys in front of him. I mean, Fulton has been great. And like you said, the rookie on the right side. I'm hoping that this is the crew that they go into the playoffs with, and they can really come together as a unit, and we can have a strong offensive line going into the playoffs.
Well, and if the team starts 4 offensive linemen that are Canadian and they're starting 2 defensive tackles that are Canadian, that opens up the rest of the roster. We know Fantuz is a starter. Bam, there's your 7 Canadians.
There's the ratio right there.
Absolutely. You can start more Americans in the secondary. You can add another American in the receiving core. You can swap guys out. And it's not like this team doesn't have starting caliber Canadians. Defensively, Mike Daly was a backup in this game, and they started Emmanuel Davis at safety. But if you throw Daly back there, he's great as well. You still have Spencer Watt. Like, there's this team, if this unit on the offensive line can work and we have 4 Canadians starting, that just opens things up for the entire team. That just, it kind of makes me like salivate at the idea of what talent this team could put on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. You've just been stressing all year long about how important the offensive line is, and they finally seem to have clicked. They finally seem to find the right guys to put in those positions, and I'm hoping that they can do the same thing in the secondary.
Yeah, it would be nice to finally get that secondary settled. I thought they played a little bit better of a game. Second half especially, I thought they were able to kind of put the clamps down on the Red Blacks receivers. So if you don't mind, could you want to get into some defensive stuff right now then?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
Okay, so I think we can both agree that it was a little rough early on. Ottawa was able to score on 5 of their first 6 drives. Henry Burris was essentially able to stand back there and pick apart the defense, and it started to look like deja vu all over again. And then the second half rolls around, and all of a sudden, this defense looks like it did midseason last year. The D-line got pressure and forced turnovers. John Chick, 2 sacks and a forced fumble. Michael Atkinson had one of the most athletic plays I have ever seen from a dude that's pushing 300 pounds. The tip pick was a thing of beauty. Ted Laurent had a sack. Adrian Tracy recovered the forced fumble in the second overtime period that John Chick forced. Everyone on the defensive line contributed. It was a total unit effort, and I love to see that.
Yeah, it was, the John Chick strip in double overtime was a thing of beauty. I mean, this guy has to be the nomination for defensive player this year, you got to think, for the Ticats. So.
Oh, without a doubt. Without it, this guy has been a monster. 13 sacks, is 3rd in the league. He's had 4 multi-sack games. He's 2nd on the team amongst defensive linemen and tackles. This guy has been a beast. And every week when we come on here and talk about him, I eat more crow and more crow and more crow, because I was not against his signing, but I was skeptical of how he would perform, thinking he may be a little over the hill. He's nowhere near over the hill. This guy looks like he's got a couple great years still left in him.
Yeah, I was in the same boat with you. I mean, I was questioning the Chad Owens and John Chick signings in the offseason, but they – When Owens was in there, he was spectacular, and John Chick's been great all year long. So, you know, risky signings in the offseason, but turned out to be great signings.
Yeah, so we have to talk about Atkinson. I want to praise this kid as much as possible. He's the reason that we were able to trade Lyndon Gadosh to Saskatchewan and get Xavier Fulton and Justin Capicotti here. And Fulton, as you've discussed, he's been excellent since he's arrived here. He's really helped solidify that left tackle position. I'm hoping him being here, and there's a way that this team can kind of convince him to stay, because I think he's been absolutely awesome. I think another couple years out of him would be great. But man, it just seems this kid, I saw him in the preseason. I went to the preseason game in Toronto, and I saw him, and he just looked like he had figured it all out and was in line for a really good season. And that interception was, you see guys, defensive linebackers and defensive backs who can't make plays that athletic. Mm. And it happened right in front of where I was sitting. Like, it was right in my eye line. And when he caught that, I just exploded. It was fantastic.
Yeah. A beautiful play by him. I've always kind of liked Atkinson. He's never really got into the lineup as a starter when he's been here, but he's obviously impressed the coaching staff this year enough to let Lyndon Gadosh, a high draft pick a couple years ago, a guy who was in NFL training camps with the Panthers, made the team, but fortunately got injured and he was let go. But this defensive line depth at the Canadian position has really helped us out, because we've been able to make a trade and bring another Canadian in with Capicotti. So I'm glad that Atkinson is starting now. I think he's deserved to start for a bit. The guy that I believe he played his college ball at Boise State, and there was a lot of high expectations. He hasn't lived up to it yet, but maybe this is his time to shine, and he's taken advantage of his opportunities with that amazing pick.
It's just kind of the capper on what I think has been a very solid season for Atkinson, and I just see him getting better and better, and that just makes the team better and better. The higher quality Canadians you have on a CFL roster, the better your football team is. The linebackers, man, they just flew around in this game. No one really stood out. Simone Lawrence had 7 tackles. Larry Dean, again, if it wasn't for John Chick, I think we'd be talking a lot more about Larry Dean as the team's defensive player of the year. Again, goes quietly about doing his business. 5 tackles. He had the fumble recovery on the horrendously botched snap on the first and goal from the 1. Even Frederick Plessis, a guy who doesn't see a lot of snaps on defense, he got in there. He had a sack. Keon Raymond was missing from this game, and hopefully he's going to be back for this upcoming one against Edmonton, but they threw Jermaine Robinson in there at his position, a former Red Black. I'm not going to say I didn't notice a drop in production. I did, but at the same time, the whole linebacker unit, I thought, just had great performances all around.
Yeah, especially in the second half. I mean, the first half was rough. The Red Blacks were running the ball great. Moses Madu was racking up the yards, and it looked pretty ugly. I mean, 27 points in the first half for the Red Blacks, only 6 in the second half. So obviously there was a big turnaround on defense in that second half, and I'm hoping that they can put 4 quarters together in the future here.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that change in the second half has to do with the third unit on the defense, the secondary. Like you said, the first half was trash. Ottawa's receivers were able to do pretty much whatever they pleased. They were getting clean breaks off the line. They were catching passes. It was pitch and catch for Henry Burris. They were getting 8 to 12 yards every play they wanted to. Ernest Jackson had a field day, no matter who was covering him. And Ernest Jackson's a great receiver, so even some of the best DBs in this league are not going to be able to keep up with him. But then the second half started, and it just seemed that everything started to click. And like I said, Emmanuel Davis started at safety in this game. He had 6 tackles. Darius Brooks, the newcomer, had a big interception. Dominique Ellis had 7 tackles. And I know you don't want to see a ton of tackles from your secondary, but this is a passing league, and Henry Burris did throw for 418 yards. Most of that came in the first half. It just seemed to me that once the second half came around, this team, especially the secondary, just kind of got it. You know what I mean? And yeah, they allowed the one touchdown drive that, again, Ernest Jackson caught the pass, which was beautiful. But other than that, this defense and the secondary especially kind of shut the Red Blacks down.
Yeah, I was kind of scratching my head at their decision to put Davis at safety. I mean, this is probably your best cover guy, and he's back there in the safety position. I'm sure there was a reason for it. I'm sure they had a great reason for it, but I didn't understand it at first. I thought I saw a play where he was doing a safety blitz, and his timing was way, way off. It made me think back, oh, boy, I wish we had Courtney Stephen back there, because he was great at timing up those blitzes. But yeah, I'm sure he did a good job back there, especially in the second half, but I was just kind of scratching my head at the decision to put him out there.
Yeah, I was a little surprised at that too. I noticed it kind of early on. I was like, I thought Daly had gotten hurt because I didn't notice it right at the beginning of the game. But then later on, I was like, oh, Davis is playing safety. So I started scrolling Twitter, and it was just because they were able to start 4 offensive linemen that are Canadian, they were able to make a move. I was a little surprised, especially because Jermaine Robinson, who they started at Keon Raymond's linebacking position, was a safety for Ottawa. So I think it would have made maybe a little more sense if they would have started Robinson back there and then maybe thrown someone like Davis, who you want to keep sort of close to the line of scrimmage, at that position. Obviously, whatever decisions they made worked out because the team won the game. But I agree. I thought it was a bit of a head scratcher myself.
Yeah, I don't know if he has any, you know, prior time playing safety in his career. Not that I know of, maybe in his earlier days before he was a pro. But yeah, it was an interesting decision by them. I'm sure that they'll switch it up going forward, or maybe not. I have no idea.
I got to ask you one more question. How big of a smile did you have on your face when the final play for Ottawa offensively in the second overtime was Henry Burris fumbling the football? I stood up and clapped and started laughing, and this is probably what ticked off all those Ottawa fans that were mad at me there. But come on, how typical is it that Burris would be so sloppy with the football? And don't get me wrong, John Chick made an absolutely great rush, but it made me smile that Burris was the guy who kind of coughed up the game, because once the Ticats recovered, you knew they were going to run the ball twice and kick the field goal. And the worst case scenario was Mara misses it, and he misses it out the back of the end zone, and they win anyway. So it just seemed like, were you as tickled pink as I was when it was, oh, Burris fumbled?
Yeah, I was just, it could have been anyone back there, but the Burris was the icing on the cake. It is typical of him. He had a great game, and then when it came down to crunch time, he gets stripped of the ball. So we've seen that when he was with the Ticats, and we see it when he's with the Red Blacks. So yeah, I was pretty happy about that, because it was pretty much a guaranteed win after that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was nervous when Mahar was stepping up to kick that field goal, and I thought it was huge for him to get his confidence back. I thought that earlier it was a mental thing on him. You know, he missed the field goal last week. He missed one or two this, or just one. Did he miss one this week?
He missed one field goal and he missed an extra point.
Yeah. So I was like, oh boy, it's gonna, if he misses this one, it could, you know, stretch into the future, and it could be in his head, like we saw with Boris Beattie earlier in the season. You know, we both know that he's a talented kicker. He has a huge leg, but I believe it was all in his head. So I was worried that Maher would have that problem as well. But kicking that game-winning field goal, celebrating with the team, I think that should get his confidence back. So I was ecstatic.
Well, especially after it comes a week after he missed a potential game-winning field goal against this very same team at home. So it's he gets – the very next week he gets a chance to redeem himself, and he does. And yeah, he did miss an extra point. He did miss a field goal. But the kick that mattered most, he nailed. And I think that's going to do a world for his confidence. I think it's also a good thing that this team didn't back into the playoffs. They secured their playoff spot by winning the game themselves. They could have lost this game and still made the playoffs if Toronto lost and Montreal lost. Toronto did lose, Montreal didn't, so we would still be sitting here not knowing if they were headed to the playoffs this week if they didn't win this game, but they did win the football game. And I think that does a lot for the team's psyche by saying, it's not like we got into the playoffs because other teams lost, we got in because we won.
Exactly, against a team that they're chasing right now. And the next 2 weeks, we're going to be Ticats fans and Blue Bombers fans because Ottawa's back-to-back games with the Bombers. Not easy games for them, for sure. A talented Blue Bombers team that are coming off a win. They had a bye week last week, I believe, but are coming off a win before that. And are still fighting for second place in the West. So they're going to have something to play for. We play Edmonton and Montreal. Edmonton still has something to fight for, but not as much as Winnipeg. So hopefully we can get two more wins and they get two losses and we steal first place, because I think that's going to be huge in the East Division to have home advantage in the East Final.
Yeah, especially for a team like Hamilton that's kind of banged up. If they can get a week off, maybe we get Luke Tasker back for the East Final. Maybe some of the other walking wounded come back. I'm just saying, with a week off, I think comes a lot of advantages outside of just hosting the game. So, Mike, before we get too far ahead of ourselves in talking about the future and all that sorts of stuff, I have one last thing about this game that I have to get off my chest. In my opinion, there were some questionable coaching decisions made in this game with regards to going and not going for two. I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. They went for two after they scored to go down 9 points and missed it, so they were still down two scores, but opted not to when they scored to make it a two-point game. Instead, they kicked the convert and made it a one-point game. I think they kind of did this backwards. I think they should have gone for one first and then gone for two second. Agree or disagree?
I agree. It's kind of I was questioning that as well. It just didn't really make sense to me. The football 101, you would have went for the points earlier, the 2 points earlier, and the 1 point later in the game. But that's not how it happened. And, you know, we won the game, so all is good. But it's still questionable why they did it that way.
Yeah, I just didn't like it, and I was sitting in the stands when it happened. I remember saying, oh, they should go for two, but then pausing and going, no, wait, they're down nine. If they kick the convert here, they're still down one score. If they miss this two-point convert, they'll be down two scores. I just didn't like the way it played out. Obviously, in the end, like with everything, they got the win, so it doesn't really matter. But this could have been one of those things where if they would have lost this football game, I think this would have been probably the major talking point for you and I this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would have been a huge point of the game. So hopefully we're in these situations down the stretch here. They'll go for two when it's more appropriate.
Yeah, but we got the win. Like I said, we're in the playoffs. We have a legitimate shot, I think, at first in this division, which means we get a bye week. We get the home game in the East Final. This was a big win for this football team, just to get the win after three straight losses. So I don't want to be too negative. I'm happy the team got the win, and I think that's what we need to take as the overall from this game.
Yeah, you know, a win is a win is a win, and they needed it badly. They clinched a playoff berth, and you know they still have a chance to clinch first place, which I agree. I still have hopes as well that we can do that. So, you know, Ottawa, we talked about earlier, Ottawa has two games against Winnipeg, and it's going to be tough. We have a game against a tough opponent in Edmonton this weekend, but Montreal is just, you know, they're in disarray. They're They won their last game, and you can't take them for granted or anything, but not much to play for them.
For sure, for sure. So we got a little bit of Ticats news to discuss this week. The big news, obviously, is the suspension of Brandon Banks for 2 games for violating the anti-drug policy. He was suspended for the game against Ottawa. He'll be suspended for this upcoming game against Edmonton for taking what essentially, I'm not the biggest drug connoisseur, but I understand he took MDA, which is, I guess, ecstasy of some sort.
Yeah, MDMA, I think it is.
Yeah, so he took that, and I got to admit, is it wrong that I just don't care? I'm not saying he shouldn't have been suspended. He took a banned substance. He failed a drug test. This is the punishment. I'm fine with that. I'm not at all saying he shouldn't have been suspended. But what I'm saying is that I really don't give a crap if a grown man wants to enjoy a recreational drug. And let's not make any mistakes. That's exactly what this is. This is not – he wasn't taking it to enhance his performance. And marijuana and cocaine are both drugs that the league doesn't give a darn about. Just so happens that this one's banned by WADA because it has a stimulant in it and all that other sort of stuff. Right. Banks isn't even the first player in the CFL to be suspended for this season. Bruce Johnson of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers was suspended a couple of weeks ago for taking the very same drug. And you and I didn't talk about it on the show. And the reason for that is I didn't think it mattered much. And we're really only talking about this incident because Banks happens to play for the Tiger Cats. But in the grand scheme of things, I just don't care. I honestly just don't care. Banks is an adult. And as an adult, if he wants to take drugs to unwind, so be it. I'm not going to sit here and act like some puritanical hypocrite who will tell a grown man or a grown woman what they can and can't put in their body. I don't know why he took what he took. And I don't really care why he took it. To me, this is no different than if he liked to unwind by having a couple beers or by smoking a little pot. I just do not care. Am I wrong to not care?
No, I don't think so. I didn't think that they tested for recreational drugs, and they don't. It's just because they had, like you just said, a stimulant in that, in the MDMA or whatever it was, ecstasy, whatever you want to call it. I don't care either. I kind of libertarian when it comes to drug use. I think they should, an adult should be able to do whatever they want, put whatever they want in their body, as long as they're not harming anyone else. So I don't care either. I saw some people going after him on Twitter, really digging into him. And I understand that it sucks that he's suspended for 2 games, and it's unfortunate that he's out and he could have contributed, but I don't care either. I could care less what they do when they're off the field. I could care less what drugs they take, as long as it's not like steroids or something like that, that actually enhances your performance on the field. So yeah, I don't care either. I'm in the same boat as you.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I've seen a lot. I saw some of the same tweets and stuff of people going after him, but I honestly did see a lot of people just say, whatever. Look, I'm disappointed that he took it because he hurt my favorite football team, but I have to give the man credit. Apparently, after this came out, he stood up in front of the team. He took responsibility for what he did. He was apparently very apologetic. And at the end of the day, we all make mistakes. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. No one who listens to this show is perfect. We have all screwed up. We've all made mistakes. He made a mistake. And I'm not going to sit here and rip the guy for wanting to unwind by doing something that, frankly, I'm in the same boat as you, man. He should be allowed to do it. He's not hurting anyone. If he's hurting himself, then he's hurting himself. I'm not here to tell someone what they should and shouldn't do with their own body. That's not – I just don't believe that that's our role in society. I don't think I have the right to tell someone what they can and can't do. So at the end of the day – I'm bummed that he's suspended because it hurts the Ticats, but I just don't care. I'm sure people are going to listen to this and probably say we're only okay with it because it was Brandon Banks, and if it was someone for the Argos or I call Bull Dookie, and I will revert back to what I said about Bruce Johnson. We did not talk about Bruce Johnson's suspension, and the reason for it is I remember it came
I didn't
up,
even know it happened.
Well, exactly. I remember it happened, and I had it written down as something to talk about, and I said, why are we going to talk about that? I don't care. I really don't care. I got nothing to say about this. Like I said, we're only talking because this Banks plays for the Ticats. If Banks was playing for the BC Lions, we wouldn't be talking about it right now either.
No, and we wouldn't be talking about it, and I would not care either way. I don't care if it was the Argos or the Alouettes or the BC Lions. I'd feel the same way no matter whose team it was on or whose player it was. So Yeah, that's a bunch of bull crap that they think, if they think that we would be so kind to someone else if it happened to them.
So there is something that we should care about, and something that I know we care about. Zach Collaros is back once again. He took first team reps at practice all week. I believe today they officially announced that he will be the starter for Friday's game against the Eskimos. You excited for number four's return?
I'm very excited. We watched the games earlier in the season when he was in there, and it was up and down, kind of. But hands down, I'll take Kolaros. Like, no offense to Mazzoli, I think that he's done a lot of good things this year for the Ticats. But Zach's the guy. Zach's the number one guy. Zach's the starting quarterback, and that's the way it should be. And I'm thrilled to hear that he will be starting this Friday against the Edmonton Eskimos.
Same here, buddy. Same here. Again, we've talked about Mazzoli before, up and down, like you said, but he did keep this team afloat when Zach was hurt both times. He's got a 500 record as a quarterback for this team, and I think that's all you can really ask for out of your backup quarterback. He kept this team in games. He won this team some games. He's had some superlative performances that we're going to get into a little bit later. We got a fan question about some of Mazzoli's better performances this year. And I think we saw a player in Mazzoli who matured with his chance to actually play. And I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that you can depend on for 18 games, but as a guy that you need to start maybe 3 to 5 times a season, if he's going to get you three wins out of 5 games, I'll take that from the backup quarterback. But Zach being back, I think, is a big boon to this team. When he first came back from the ACL injury, he was unstoppable. It took him about a half a football before he started looking like 2015 Zach Collaros. And then all of a sudden, maybe because he got beat up a little bit or things just weren't going his way, he kind of took a step back. So I'm wondering if maybe he's taken a couple weeks off. He's healthy from the concussion now. The ACL's not an issue anymore. I'm starting to wonder, maybe we're going to see that early season Zach that we saw in the games against BC and Saskatchewan and stuff like that. And if he plays at that level, this Ticats team's got a chance to win a lot of football games down the stretch here.
And I keep going back to it, but having a competent, good left tackle should do a lot of good things for Zach. I mean, if he's comfortable in the pocket, if he's not worried about getting drilled from behind on every play, I think that's gonna really enhance his playing because he'll just be looser and he'll be worried about, the receivers downfield, the routes, who's getting open, whatever, instead of worrying about the pressure from the defensive lineman or the linebackers or whomever's coming after him. So I think that's going to make a huge difference for Zach in this game and then going forward.
I could agree with you more. I think him having confidence in his offensive line to keep him upright will make him freer to make those big plays. He's a big play guy. We saw it last year. We saw it earlier this year. He loves to chuck it deep. And in the CFL, that is a part of a great offense, a part of a winning offense is chunk plays. It's very rare you see teams go 12, 15 plays to chew up the clock and get short yardage. They got to go for chunk plays, and Zach loves those 35 to 40 yard bombs. He loves throwing the ball in the air. And with Xavier Fulton there, who has looked phenomenal, really, like you haven't heard him talked about much, which tells me from an offensive line perspective, he's doing a damn good job. So with Zach back, with now a renewed offensive line that looked really, really good against the Red Blacks, I've got confidence that we're going to see, Labor Day Zach Collaros, and not necessarily the Zach Collaros we saw near the end of his first stint back with the team this year.
Yeah, and it's going to be a good test for that offensive line. Eskimos defensive line is a talented bunch. You got Odell Willis, Mondo Sewell in the middle, Phillip Hunt coming back from the NFL, doing a great job since he's been here. So it's going to be really exciting and interesting to see how this offensive line holds up against a top-notch D line.
Yeah, it's going to be a great matchup. I don't want to get too much into to our preview of the game because we still got some CFL news. But yeah, I guess that's a little taster of what's to come later. Like I said, so we got some CFL news to talk about. It's mostly Grey Cup stuff because the big news since the last time you and I sat down was that the Argos have repriced Grey Cup tickets. They took a bunch of them and lowered the price because they weren't selling. That game was nowhere near going to be a sellout. We talked about this, sort of the prices, when we initially heard what they were, and I believe we both said that they were ridiculously overpriced. We even talked a little bit last week about what fans and like complaining about overpricing and stuff, And look, they've lowered the prices now to something I think is much more reasonable. We now have tickets as cheap as $89, which I think these are the prices that it should have been right initially. This should have been the price point. I think they overextended themselves. And I think this looks a little bad on them for having to do this at such a late date. But at the end of the day, I think they made the right decision. And I'd rather them admit to making a mistake and looking a little bad than to continue making the same mistake. So hopefully we're going to see a few more butts in the seats, and maybe this game's actually going to sell out. And I think that's a good thing. So as bad as this may have looked initially, I think in the long run, they did the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I'm not sure the exact details on people who might have bought tickets earlier on at the original prices, but I'm pretty sure that they got either upgrades or they were able to get full refunds. So, you know, a lot of businesses would have just said, screw you, you know, buyer beware type of deal. And you dug your own grave on this one kind of deal. But they, at least they're trying to either upgrade or give discounts. So, yeah, it looks kind of bad. You know, they just got greedy. That's the bottom line. They got greedy. They thought it would sell out just because it's the Grey Cup, and Grey Cups usually sell out. We saw last year that it didn't. And I think it's a bit of a wake-up call for future Grey Cups that they should lower the prices and, you know, not give away tickets by any means, but make it reasonable for the hardcore fans out there.
I completely agree. And the funny thing is the next point we're going to talk about is that we saw some preliminary ticket prices for next year's Grey Cup. Apparently, Red Black season ticket holders were given a chance to, I guess, in renewing their season seats, they can pick up a Grey Cup ticket for the seat that they actually sit in. And I don't know if you saw the image that was floating around. I did. These prices, while not as pricey as the ones in Toronto, are still pretty darn expensive. Their cheapest ticket is $85, and that will be in temp stands in the East End Zone. Their most expensive ticket is $500, which is a lot cheaper than Toronto's most expensive ticket, which I think was $800 or $900. It's pretty pricey. But I think what needs to be noted about this is that these are the prices for Ottawa season ticket holders. These prices for the general public probably will be a little bit higher. I'm not entirely sure, but I think these will be a little bit more pricey for Red Blacks, non-Red Blacks fans. I would hope that when you're talking about people would learn a lesson, it doesn't really look like Ottawa did.
Yeah, maybe they're assuming that they're not Toronto. People care about the CFL in Ottawa. Maybe that's what they're thinking. I'm not sure. But it's interesting. I think the Red Blacks have the lowest rated TV ratings out of the CFL. I might be mistaken about that, but it might be kind of a TFC kind of thing. They pack the stadium, but not many people watch on TV. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but I don't know. Have you heard anything like that before?
Well, they did release all those numbers for ratings this year, and the Eskimos were the most watched team. Hamilton's numbers were up 11%. Toronto's were up 10%. Toronto's were up 50% in the 18 or the 19 or to 49 demographic, which is huge. What I have heard, while I was in Ottawa last week, I heard some rumblings there that fans are actually growing a little tired of the team. They're kind of disappointed that this team wasn't a juggernaut this year. And now, I'm not going to say that's all the fans, because I did talk to some fans who are just like, anyone who thinks that is a complete buffoon. And I agree. This is a team in their third year of existence. They have made the playoffs 2 years in a row. They're going to host a playoff game this year. They might win the division for the second straight year. They might get to the Grey Cup for a second straight year. If fans are disillusioned at this, I'm a little worried going forward where this team could be if they do hit, and they will hit, a struggle. They'll miss the playoffs. They'll win 4 or 5 games in a year. You don't stay on top forever. As much as we see teams like BC consistently make the playoffs, Calgary looks like a juggernaut year in, year out. Montreal used to be that team, and now they've fallen on hard times. I worry a little bit about where Ottawa could be headed. As far as the ratings are concerned, I could maybe just chalk that up to there not being as many Red Blacks fans around the country. If you look at the other 8 teams, they have pretty solid fan bases, essentially. Argos fans are Argos, these long-standing fans. Whereas Ottawa is a relatively new team. They went without football in the nation's capital for almost 10 years. So they too might have, in TV rankings, the stadium is packed, the stadium is loud, the stadium is a great place to watch a football game. But yeah, maybe that could be the reason for the lower ratings for them, is they just don't have the history that the other teams around the CFL have.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm sure there's plenty of old Rough Rider fan, Ottawa Rough Rider fans out there, but yeah, they might have stopped watching the CFL because their team was taken away from them once and then taken away from them again. So that could be part of the problem.
Another concern I have about this Grey Cup, with these ticket prices being expensive, is Ottawa next year. It's the big 150th anniversary of Canada. Hotels are going to be expensive. I was there last week. My hotel was reasonably priced. I know that some people have already booked their hotels for next year's Grey Cup to get a better price. But holy smokes, hotel prices are going to skyrocket there next year. Maybe it won't be as big a concern during Grey Cup. It's at the end of the year. The big time there is going to be the summer, especially around Canada Day. But I have a worry that maybe we're going to see kind of a Regina-type Grey Cup situation where most of the people there are locals. And Ottawa has a great football culture, but I don't think you're going to see – we're already seeing, I've seen, current season ticket holders go, I'm not paying $500 or $400 or $300 to sit in my seat at the Grey Cup. If those people are already hemming and hawing, the general public, the non-diehard fans, the casual fans, are going to be a little less interested in picking up those expensive tickets. And another thing, don't you think it's a little scummy to release the info on next year's Grey Cup before this one's even been played?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a slap in the face to the people who organized the Toronto Grey Cup this year. So, I think the better thing would be to wait till after this year's Grey Cup is done. I mean, it seems like they're trying to steal away some of their thunder for next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. There's some things around this franchise and how they operate that has bothered me for a little bit, and it's gotten me in trouble with many Red Blacks fans who don't take kindly to me not being drinking the Kool-Aid of their ownership group. But this is one of those things where I feel like they're putting themselves above the league. And at the same time, what if, say, Ottawa gets to the Grey Cup? It's entirely possible that they will win this division, finish first, host the East Final again, and win that game. You're asking your fans to put down a deposit on a ticket for a Grey Cup that's over a year away. That's going to hurt some of these people who might be interested in going to Toronto for the game, because Toronto's not that far from Ottawa. It's about a four and a half hour drive. It's going to hurt their ability to, like, you're kind of biting the hand that feeds you a little bit by kind of screwing over this year's Grey Cup to promote next year's. I just don't like it.
No, it's an interesting move by them. You know, I think that Ottawa fans would travel well to Toronto, but if they're thinking about, you know, forking out $400-$500 for next year's Grey Cup, then yeah, they might not show up to this year's.
Yeah, they might not have the income to do it. They might say, well, I want to be at the Grey Cup that's closest to my house because it's easier for me to get to. I don't have to pay for any of the accommodations and stuff, and they'll skip out on this one, and that'd be a shame. Also, that they announced that the entire Grey Cup festival will be set up around Lansdowne area, around TD Place. When I heard this initially, I thought, that's a pretty great idea. You're going to have everything in one area. But again, in talking to some Ottawa residents, they pointed out that there are no hotels around Lansdowne and that the walk from downtown would be about 40 minutes. My hotel in Ottawa last week was one of the closer ones to TD Place, and it still took me about 25 or so minutes to walk from my hotel to the game. It's a brisk walk, but November, 40 plus minutes in Ottawa, that's not something most people are going to want to do. So if they decide they don't want to walk, they want to go to all these festivals, they're going to have to pay for cabs to get them there. That's going to cost extra money. Walking, cabbing, like, it's not an ideal situation. And I don't want to sit here and sound like I'm crapping on this too much, because I do think this Grey Cup will be successful. I think people are excited for the Grey Cup in Ottawa. It's just that I've heard so much about how Hamilton is unsuited to host a Grey Cup because of hotel accommodations and travel time from people will have to stay in Burlington and commute in to go to the Grey Cup festivals, wherever they are. I hear this, and it seems like this is an issue pretty much everywhere. And I don't know. I'm just not sure if the Grey Cup committee for Ottawa figured this out and thought it through all that much.
Well, I like the idea of having all the events close together. I think that's a cool idea. They did that in Toronto at the convention center in 2000, Oh, geez, when was that?
2012?
2007.
Oh, the
Yeah.
well, I went to the
The one that I
2012
was
one.
at.
So they did the exact same thing in 2012. Everything was like on Front Street, essentially. I don't mean that figuratively. I mean literally, it was on Front Street.
Yeah, right by the Skydome, right?
Yeah, people who don't know Toronto would probably be like, you know, you put things out on Front Street. No, literally, the street's called Front Street. Yeah, it was like Convention Center. The Royal York had the state of the fan state of the league address. City Hall, which is not too far, had like the pancake breakfast. They had some stuff there, but most of the events, like the party events, were at the convention center that was like right beside the Skydome, essentially.
Yeah, I remember the only event that wasn't there was the Spirit of Edmonton. I think that was in a hotel. I'm not sure what hotel, but I didn't get to it. But they had all the other events there, from what I can remember, and it was a good time. But yeah, it's gonna be tough if there's no hotels really close to that. If everyone has to either, take the bus, take the cab. It'd be nice to have all the events closer to where people are staying for sure.
Yeah, but I do understand the idea. They built up Lansdowne to be an area for people to go to. So I understand why they'd want to have them there. It just seems like the coolness of having everything together, but being away from where everyone's going to stay, just wasn't it logistically it wasn't a sound idea. So Mike, it is now time for everyone's favorite part of the week. It's time for you to hand out your bozo. Who do we have bestowing this honor on this week?
Well, I got the schedule makers, TSN, the CFL, both of them, for scheduling games that overlapped each other. We've never seen this happen before, not that I can recall, anyways, at least when since TSN has grabbed every single game, they have the rights to the CFL since that started. I don't remember games overlapping, and it's just unfortunate because if you are a person who only has TSN one, and say you're a Ticats or a Redblacks fan, well, guess what? You're screwed out of that. You're not going to watch that game because the Calgary Toronto game took over that station once it began. And that's a, to my understanding, that's a big no-no. You don't start a game and not finish it on the same channel. So bozos of the week go to the CFL and TSN for having overlapping games when I'm sure they could have worked something out to start the Calgary game an hour or two later, so it wouldn't have overlapped.
Yeah, like the games are probably going to overlap anyway because the Hamilton-Ottawa game went into overtime. But my understanding is this Calgary-Toronto game started at 9 o'clock Eastern when the Hamilton game started at 7 o'clock Eastern. So I like overlapping games. If it happens, it happens. Okay. But the problem I have, from what I understand, is a lot of people who were watching the Hamilton-Ottawa game, and I guess probably sometime around the start of the fourth quarter, maybe late third quarter, were cut off and were shown the Toronto Calgary game. Ottawa Hamilton was a game that had playoff implications on the line, ended up going to overtime. So there, like I said, there would have been some overlap there. And Calgary and Toronto was essentially meaningless. Calgary's wrapped up first place. Ottawa or Toronto, because of the outcome of the Ticats game, was eliminated from the playoffs. It literally, no one outside of Toronto or Calgary really cared about that game. So overlapping games happen. This is the first that I can recall, especially like you said, since TSN's taken over as the primary, the only broadcaster of CFL games. But my issue here is with the flipping of the game, taking away the ending of the game to show the start of one. That to me is just bad form.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And I remember 2 years ago, I was out east, and Hamilton, I think it was Hamilton and Ottawa playing actually, but I can't remember exactly. But I was excited to watch the game. I turned to the channel and preseason NHL hockey. I was about to freak out, so I called the cable provider and got all the TSN channels right away because I did not want this to happen again. But it shouldn't happen like that. You start the game, you should finish the game on the same channel, bottom line.
Couldn't agree with you more. We don't have to worry about that this week, though, because let's just roll right into our game preview. Our Hamilton Tiger Cats are the only game playing on Friday night this week, so there will be no cutting off of any games. This is a big game. The Edmonton Eskimos, a potential playoff matchup preview here. This could be a possible East semifinal, a possible East final. It all depends on how this goes. So we've sort of touched on it a little bit. I'd just kind of like to lay out the scenario here. Ottawa has back-to-back against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to end the season. Hamilton, as you said, will take on Edmonton this week and then host Montreal the week after. Not easy for either team, really. You can't, you know, wins are hard to come by. We've seen that with the Ticats this year, only winning 7 games so far. But you got to look at these matchups and go, I kind of like the Ticats' chances of finishing first in the East. What about you?
I think they're pretty good. I mean, we're 1 point behind Ottawa. So what's going to, like, if they lose one and we win two,
If Ticats win two, and Ottawa loses one of the two against Winnipeg, Hamilton finishes first. If Ottawa wins both, Ottawa finishes first.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the Ticats do, if Ottawa loses both, Hamilton just has to win one. If Hamilton loses both, Ottawa is in. So there's a lot of different ways this could work out. I'm kind of banking on the fact that Ottawa's going to go 1-1 against Winnipeg. Yeah. I think that's a safe bet. Home and home. Again, anything can happen. I think if Winnipeg wins the first game, then they could win the second, but I'm banking on Winnipeg and Ottawa splitting, which to me means the Ticats have got to win both of these games. And I kind of like their chances against Edmonton. I was listening to one of the other CFL podcasts today, the Waggle, the official CFL podcast, and they had a great point that Edmonton is kind of locked into this fourth spot in the crossover. It's not guaranteed, but they're 2 games back of both BC and Winnipeg. So them getting up to second is difficult. Them getting up to third is difficult. One win by either Winnipeg or BC essentially eliminates them from being able to move up. Could it be that Edmonton might not show everything in this game? They were talking about they might be more vanilla offensively and defensively. There's the possibility that they could, if the game gets out of hand, pull some guys out of the game. I don't know if that's going to happen. I think that Jason Moss as a head coach and Mike Riley as a player are a little too competitive to really take their foot off the gas, but it's kind of an interesting concept because these two teams could meet in a couple of weeks in the playoffs. Would Edmonton, who doesn't really have a ton to play for, really show all their cards to win this game? I don't know. And if that's the case, if they go to more of a vanilla type look, that's advantage Ticats.
I'm hoping they do because we know that they have the talent to put up a lot of points and win ball games. So if they feel that they it's better for them to not show all their cards and maybe rest some guys, then that would be awesome.
Okay, so offensively, I've got three keys to the game. Well, not necessarily the keys game, but the three things I'm looking for. Three things I think that the team can do to win this football game. The first is they got to attack them deep. If you watched last week's game, as I'm sure you did, Edmonton kind of showed against BC that they're being prone to the deep ball. And while no one in Hamilton's receiving corps is on the same level as a guy like Manny Arsenault, guys like Kevin Elliott, Junior Collins, John Chiles have shown the ability to make big plays. And now with Zach Caleros back in the lineup, a guy who likes to throw the deep ball, this could be a way for them to attack what is a kind of a weak Edmonton secondary. And if the offensive line can hold up, I think we could see a pretty potent offensive attack. Second point here, stellar line play. Just like we saw last week, the Ticats offensive line was awesome against Ottawa. So a repeat performance against a very good Edmonton D, though, will be tough. But the last time these two teams played, the Ticats offensive line held the Eskimos to 0 sacks. So we know that they can keep this very, very good Edmonton front four at bay. Third and finally, continue to pound the rock. For 2 weeks now, we've seen the Ticats give CJ Gable double-digit touches in the running game. Keep it up, Kent. Keep going and doing that. I don't want to see the post-game stats and look at CJ Gable's name and see anything less than 10 carries for number 32. So attack him deep, get some stellar line play continuing, and keep pounding the rock, run the football.
Mm-hmm. Now for the defense, there just has to be better tackling in the secondary all around. It just has to be. If a receiver catches a ball on a 5 yard out or whatever, get up there and wrap up and tackle him. I don't care about a big hit. I don't care. I don't want to see any of that. I just want to see sound tackling. You know, go back to your roots. Go back to when you were playing PB football and you learn how to tackle. Now, I heard that Ken Austin was saying that it's hard to teach up tackling these days because there's none of it in practice anymore. So that's a tough thing to work on, you know, because you can't tackle in practice. So the other thing is stop John White. This guy is one of the best running backs in the league, in my opinion. He's a little bulldog out there, and he has tons of speed, and he hits the hole hard. And the run defense has to be better. It wasn't that great in the first half. It got better in the second half last week. So hopefully we see the second half run defense instead of the first half run defense from last week. And, you know, take out Adarius Bowman, not take him out, but slow him down a bit. You know, Riley depends heavily on Bowman and Walker too. So if they can, you know, limit those receivers as well, then, you know, we have a pretty good shot at this.
Yeah, it's. I think it's going to be one hell of a football game. I think these two teams match up very well with one another. I think they're very even kind of across the board. I think you'd give a slight edge to those two amazing receivers. But I think Hamilton's receiving core goes a bit deeper than Edmonton's, although they haven't had to. Like, they got what are Walker and Bowman, like, numbers 1 and 3 in the league in receiving yards. So they haven't had to rely on the third, fourth, fifth guy, but they have seen some guys. Brandon Zylstra has stepped up, and I don't know. Yeah. We got Vidal Hazelton there now. I like how these two teams match up against each other. We saw earlier in the year Edmonton get out to the big lead, Ticats make a big comeback. I think these two teams are very, very close to one another, and I think we're in for a hell of a ball game on Friday.
Yeah, I think it should be an entertaining one as well. Edmonton's defense has gotten better throughout the season, I think. Hamilton has been questionable in some areas, so it could be a high-scoring game that comes down to the last possession, like so many have this season.
All right, Mike, you ready to do some picks?
Yep.
Okay, so not much change in the top three after week 18, and first we have Cappy D with 10,078 points. Myself gets up to number two. I have a cool even 8,500, and Andrew is in third with 8,447 points. Mike, you made a little tick up. You went from 17th to 16th. You now have 5,407 points. With just 2 weeks left, it looks like we are all but assured of crowning our winner, and he will be getting the Ticats prize pack, though my understanding is he is from Winnipeg and is a Bombers fan, so he might turn that down, which means it would go to who's ever in second. That's me, and I said at the beginning of the year that I can't win it, so then it would go to who's ever in third. So we'll have to wait and see. There's still some interest in this, even though the top three have been pretty much the same for the last couple of weeks. So, yeah. I know you still would really like to win that prize pack, but it's looking tough. You're going to have to go on a bit of a run here.
Yeah, I'd say.
Okay, so let's get to that first game. We just talked about it. Edmonton at Hamilton on Friday night here in the Hammer at Tim Hortons Field. Mike, who do you like?
I got to go with Hamilton just because of Zach's return. They're a desperate team right now, trying to clinch first place in the East. So, yeah, I'm going to take the Ticats.
I think Hamilton has more to play for, and I think that gives them the slight edge. Like I said, I think these two teams are supremely close in talent level. I think they match up very well, but give me the team at home that's a little bit more desperate. I, too, am taking the Ticats. Okay, so Saturday we see a doubleheader. First, we have the Saturday afternoon matchup at Investors Group Field in Winnipeg. The Red Blacks, our arch nemesis right now, head over there to take on the Bombers. Mike, who do you like in this one?
I gotta go Bombers. It's just, I think the Bombers are a good team. I think the Red Blacks are a good team as well, but I'm gonna go with the Bombers on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I'm with you there as well. Winnipeg's still fighting for that second seed in the West. They would love to host a playoff game. You were high on the Bombers to start the season, and it looks like your patience has paid off because they look like a hell of a football team. To me, they're a sneaky sleeper team to maybe even go into Calgary and knock off those powerhouse Stamps in a West final. Ottawa losing would also give the Ticats first place if they were to win. So, yeah, I too am taking the peg. The second game of a doubleheader is the final game at Old Taylor Field. Having gone through the last game at Ivor Wynne, I know that all the Rider fans out there are probably going to be pretty emotional for that one. The BC Lions will head there for the very last CFL game to ever take place at that old stadium. And they take on the Riders. Mike, who do you got in this one?
I got the Lions to go on there and spoil the party. I think that the Riders went on a little run there, and now they came back to earth last week with the loss against Montreal. So I think BC's just too good of a football team to lose this game with something still to play for. So I got the Lions.
Yeah, that Montreal-Saskatchewan game last week was brutal. I know the weather was really bad out there, but man, that was if the Hamilton-Ottawa game was a game that you want to show people, the game you don't want to show people is that Saskatchewan-Montreal game, because that was brutal to watch. In this one, though, I really want to take Saskatchewan because I think that their fans are going to be up for this. I think the players are going to get up for this. This is essentially their Grey Cup game. But at the same time, BC is just a better football team. So I, too, am going to take the Lions in this one. And the week ends Sunday afternoon in Montreal. The Calgary Stampeders going for the best regular season record of all time will take on the Montreal Alouettes. Mike, do the Stamps make history on Sunday afternoon?
It's interesting that they have the bye the last week of the season, just like the Eskimos did last year. And they're, I think, a three-week layover until the West Finals. So that should be an interesting thing to watch, see how they show up in the West Final with all that rest behind them. But, I got the Stampeders. I think that they want to get their record. I think they want to be the best record in the CFL, in the modern era of the CFL. So I'm going to take the Stampeders over the Alouettes.
Yeah, I'm going to say this, and I mean this in the most flattering way possible. Bo Levi Mitchell is kind of a dick. Like he's one of those guys who, like, he's super competitive, and if he was your quarterback, you'd love him. And he's a great player, but he's kind of a dick. And I think that means something. Like he reminds me a lot of Tom Brady. He wants this. Like he wants the pressure that comes with being the best regular season team in CFL history. And being a bit of a dick makes you good. Like all players have egos. He's got a big ego. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way at all. I'm not saying he's like, that's not a negative trait as far as I'm concerned. They are going to want to win this football game. They're going to want to etch their name in the history books. And I think they will. I said earlier, there's no way this team, like I'm talking weeks and weeks ago, there was no way this team was going to go 16-1-1. I have been proven wrong. They are going to finish 16-1-1. I have got the Stamps in this game as well. So if I'm not mistaken, this is back-to-back. You took Ottawa last week. But once again, you and I, across the board, same picks. Interesting strategy, sir.
Yes, very much so. And yeah, I agree that I think that Bo Levi Mitchell really benefits from the offensive line in front of him. I mean, all quarterbacks want a great offensive line, but that offensive line has been spectacular. If he didn't have all that time to sit back there and go through his reads and make his decisions, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but he wouldn't be as great as he thinks he is.
No, I like that team is just from top to bottom supremely talented. It's they're going to be tough to beat anytime at this year. It's going to be interesting to see if they can parlay this regular season success into postseason success. We've seen some really good Calgary teams in the past stumble in the playoffs, lose West Finals, lose Grey Cups to teams that they were better than. And of course, when it comes to teams setting records in the regular season, after last year's Golden State Warriors choked away the NBA Finals after being up 3-1, every single team in the four major North American sports minus the CFL, every team that has the record for wins. Oh, no, I'm wrong. Even in the CFL, because the current record holder is the Edmonton Eskimos. None of them won the championship the year they set the record for wins. So it'd be interesting to see if Calgary will break that trend. I'm not saying it's coincidence, to be perfectly honest with you. No one's saying, oh, winning a bunch of games in the regular season means you're going to lose in the playoffs. But it's kind of interesting that all the teams that have the best regular season records in their respective leagues did not hoist their league trophies at the end of the year.
And I truly believe that if BC is running, if they're, running in all cylinders and they're playing their game that up to their potential, I think they could take out Calgary in the playoffs, in the Western Division playoffs. I really do.
It'd be kind of funny if the one team Calgary lost to all year was BC, because as we recall, that was the only team so far that's beat them this year. So, yeah, I think a BC-Calgary West Final would be pretty interesting. I think a Winnipeg-Calgary, we saw that great game in Calgary a few weeks ago where the Bombers, I think, proved that they belonged as part of one of the elite teams in this league this year. And I don't know, I think any West Final match we're going to get between those three teams, I think it's going to be pretty interesting. And it's not going to be a cakewalk for the Stampeders.
No, I don't think so either. And I think that Winnipeg knows that they're not really on the level of a Calgary or a BC, but they find interesting ways to win games. They've been pulling a rabbit out of their hats recently with the trick plays and all that stuff. So I admire that in the football team that believes in themselves, but goes that extra length to do those trick plays because they have to win. And I like that in them.
Yeah, they're a team to me that doesn't know better enough not to win. You know what I mean? Like this has been a pretty bad football club for a while, but a lot of these guys are new to the team. A lot of these guys are new to the league, and they don't know any better. So they're an exciting team to watch. The Western playoffs to me this year are going to be a hell of a battle. And whoever makes it out of there is I think, going to be a little beaten up and maybe could be some fodder for an East team that might be a little less good than they are. But I don't know. With the playoffs right around the corner, we're always interested. But I think we're going to see some really, really good matchups this week. And I think we're going to see some really good matchups going forward. You ready for a couple of questions that we got this week?
Yep.
Okay, so we got this one from two people, essentially. Both Adam and Andrew asked similar questions. Not exactly. So I just kind of lumped them together. Assuming Hamilton hosts the East Semi, which of the three potential West crossover teams would you most like to want to see them play?
I'm just going to have to go with Winnipeg just because of their lack of experience in big games like this. I'm sure that there's players on their team that have experience in the playoffs and all that stuff. But overall, you know, you look at their head coach, he has never been coached in a playoff game as a head coach. You know, he has his right-hand man, Paul Lapolice, that's been there many times. But overall, you know, Matt Nichols, I don't think he's been a starter in the playoffs. So if I had to choose, I would pick Winnipeg, even though I am very high on Winnipeg.
I would pick Edmonton because as much as they're the defending Grey Cup champs, they've had a really up and down season. And I think when you look at the records, they are the worst of the three teams that could possibly cross over into the East. Like I said, I think they match up well with the Ticats, but I still think I'd like to see the Eskimos because I think they might be in a bit of a letdown mode. Last year, 14-4, first in the West, they were high off that. I don't know how up they would get for a game in the East in the playoff. I don't know. I think BC is a very dangerous team, and I don't think I'd really want to take on a Wally Buono team in the playoffs because that man knows more about coaching football than pretty much all the other coaches in this league combined. BC to me is a scary team. And like I said, Winnipeg is just, they don't know any better. They're just going to do whatever they want. Mike O'Shea loves the trick plays. Winnipeg scares me a bit too. Edmonton, I think we know what we're going to get with Edmonton. And I think they would make for the most interesting matchup. And I think, and I don't say this derisively, the easiest matchup for the Ticats. But none of these matchups would be easy for the team, for Hamilton in the playoffs. But yeah, give me Edmonton in this one. Second question also comes from Adam, and he asks, he wants us to rank the Jeremiah Mazzoli games, starting with week one in Toronto, the comeback against Edmonton, and the comeback against Ottawa. So there's three games here. I say we go in reverse order. Mike, what's your number three pick as the best Jeremiah Mazzoli performance?
All those three games were tremendous performances by Jeremiah Mazzoli, but I'm going to go three, the home opener.
Really? Okay, see, I got the Ottawa comeback as my number three, simply because it was a game where he was great in the second half, but not so great in the first half. So that's why I took that one. What do you got as number two?
I got to go with the Ottawa comeback. I think that it was just such a huge game that the pressure was on and he made it happen. Yes, he didn't have a good first half, but the pressure was on in the second half. They had to win that game. He put up a good performance and stole a win. So I'm going to make that my number two.
Okay, not bad, not bad. So now we know what your number one is. Mm. So why do you have the Edmonton one first?
Well, the completion record, the tremendous comeback, the fact that I was there watching it live. So yeah, I got to go with that number one. I just think that it was so impressive, just pass after pass after pass, completion, completion, completion. It was a tremendous thing to watch.
So I actually have the Edmonton comeback as number two, and kind of similar to the Ottawa one, didn't have a great first half. The second half was, words don't do it justice. He was spectacular in the second half, but I have the week one game first, and that's because he played a 60-minute football game. That was the one game this year that I think we saw out of him where he was great from the opening whistle to the end of the game. And I'm going to take that consistency in a performance over these comeback games. Although, to be fair, we're talking about three games in which he was awesome. The team was awesome. We won all three of those games, so they're a lot more exciting. You can't go wrong with any order you pick these. But yeah, I got the week one game as number one because I think that was the best game overall that he played all season.
Yeah, that's a good point. It seems like so long ago that game happened, but the expectations couldn't be couldn't have been higher after that game, and it kind of didn't happen, you know, the way we pictured it after that first game, that's for sure.
No, well, and the thing was is that after going into that first game, I think we all thought, okay, well, let's see what this guy can do. And then he goes out there and holy smokes, he just like ripped the Argos apart, a team that a lot of people, including you and me, thought was going to be a pretty good team this year. We've been proven completely wrong on that. But that performance was why we thought, holy smokes, what will the Ticats record be when Caleros come back? We were talking 4-1, 5-0. Like, we looked at the schedule, looked at what he did that game and thought, holy smokes, this team could be just as potent without him. Obviously, that's not how everything worked out, but to me, that was his best overall game of the season. And holy smokes, I can't believe how long ago that was. Week one, man, just the season is flying by.
Yeah, so every year it seems to fly by, and then you kind of take it for granted, and then you're like, oh, you know, not right away, because there's still, you know, NFL football, lots of football going on until, you know, January, February, but once that off-season lull hits, you really get craving the CFL football to come back, and it just flies by way too quickly.
Yeah, once the new year hits, right after the Grey Cup, I'm usually good. I'm like, okay, football season's over. I can do other things. But yeah, once kind of like my birthday's mid-January, so once that kind of hits, I'm kind of starting to get antsy. Then we get the Super Bowl, and then right after that is usually when CFL free agency opens. And then we get draft talk, and then we get – it just every year it seems like the offseason gets shorter and shorter, even though it's so agonizingly long. But it's been a hell of a season, and we still got a few weeks left, so let's not lament it too much. But while the season may still be going on, Mike, that's pretty much the end of our show for this week. Before we go, I just want to remind everyone once again about the CFL Fans Fight Cancer event in Toronto during Grey Cup week. Like I've said the last 2 weeks, it will take place on Saturday, November the 26th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Shoeless Joe's, which is located at 276 King Street West in the lovely city of Toronto. All the proceeds from this event will benefit the Wellspring Downtown Toronto facility, so if you are going to be in Toronto for the Grey Cup, please head down to Shoeless Joe's on the 26th, help raise some money for a great cause, and mingle with some other CFL fans. It should be a fun little event. It's one I'm hoping to get to. I'm not going to get to too many Grey Cup events, if any, but if I am, I'm going to try to get to this one. So maybe I'll see you there, and don't feel free. Come up, say hi. I'll be pretty recognizable. I have a giant red beard, so you'll know who I am. So that's it. That's the show for this week. Don't forget, everyone out there listening, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. And if you want to have your questions asked on the show, you can hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, as I do every week, please give the people your Twitter handle.
Mike_Ticats. And also check out the Eskimos Empire podcast this week, because we were both on it. So check it out.
Okay, I was about to plug that, and you did an excellent job. He is correct. You were actually on both episodes, if I'm not mistaken. So check out the regular show proper. Mike's on there with his lovely girlfriend, Christina. I've listened to a bit of it already today. It's a good, you guys have some interesting opinions on some stuff that I've heard, especially regarding expansion and playoff stuff. So far, it's a good listen. You guys have both done a hell of a job. So listen to the game preview that's going to come out, I think, sometime later in the week. You'll hear both Mike and myself on there. Had a hell of a time. It's always a fun time getting on with Andrew and Uncle Tim and Superfan Mike and talking football. Those guys are passionate and knowledgeable fans of the CFL, and it's always a great time on there. So that was episode 62 of our little show called Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.